My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. I've got my buddy Drew Hodgson here today. Drew, the last time we spoke, I did like 3 hours of prep work getting ready a synopsis of the Deshaun Watson scenario. And you and I sat down and recorded for 45 minutes. And at the end of it, I decided I didn't want to put it out there. Cause, and I don't know if you noticed that or not.
But, you know, I didn't see it hit the feed and I was wondering what happened to it. Like it just got lost in it. But I am glad that I prepped everybody that I knew that they were going to get a really decisive, robust Deshaun Watson timeline and update. It never was released.
It was like, you know what it was? It was like sometimes when you're making love and you just try too hard, everything falls apart. That's what it was. I tried too hard, and it was something that I talk about every day on the radio. But when I tried to do everything in a formal fashion, nobody came. And
was that an intentional setup? Because that payoff was
no, that's just my stupid brain.
That's just you being a veteran, just a savvy vet.
That's my 46-year-old brain working, which is the subject we're going to talk about today. Because I came across this article in Men's Health, which is one of the few publications I still get in paper form because I feel like it's motivational. I feel like at some point I'm going to do a collage or something, you know, like a motivational collage or a vision board or something with all the shredded dudes in Men's Health. I feel like it motivates me.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think it's also good to just like cut out the letters and then send like a hostage notice to your gym. Just be like, I'm not coming back unless you get me hot.
This guy definitely sent this from Men's Health. So like his business.
This is from Men's Health. I guess we'll take him seriously.
This guy's still got a paper magazine publication. He's freaking psycho.
He's a psychopath. Who does that?
So they made an interesting point though. It's that the actual middle age for men, the median age of average men in the U.S. is 37 years old. So middle age generally means 45 to 60 years old. So I'm actually at the lower end of middle aged by most people's standards. But if you're looking at like, okay, are you halfway done with life by whatever? I don't know how they work. I guess 74?
Well, 76, I think they said was the average lifespan.
Average, okay. Still seems low, right? Seems like we got. I always calculate 100. So 37. Which is how old are you?
I'm 39.
You're 39. Okay, so I felt like this would be really good for you. And I'm gonna go through this. You do not have to answer if you don't want to on any of these. If it gets a little too real for you.
No, I'm so real. I don't mind. Let's do it. Right. Okay. I love taking a deep dive into my own personal depression.
I found this really interesting. I found this just to read about how other guys basically, you know, I kind of feel like, all right, I'm probably in the same mindset as a lot of these guys that are 37 years old, but they did a survey of hundreds of 37 year olds. And the first question was, how do you feel about being middle-aged? 56% said pretty good. 21% said great. So you had 77% of people feeling at least positive about it. 20% said not great. 3% said terrible. That's actually better than I thought it would be, except that at 37, that is the age where you don't necessarily feel like you're aging yet, and you've got maybe more confidence and a little bit of, maybe you got a little cash in your pocket that you didn't have when you were 20s, so maybe you're feeling pretty good about yourself. Do you feel, if you're comfortable answering, I don't want to put you in a...
No, I'm completely...
feel pretty good?
I'm totally comfortable just fessing up to the deep, dark hole of depression since I turned 37, which is funny because as I was reading this, 37... is like right on the nose when I hit like a rough spot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right on the nose. Like right when I turned 37. Yeah, kind of. I mean, right around. I mean, I'm 39, so, but yeah, it was like about a year before it. So, but that's good, Seth.
I forgot you just told me that you were 39.
I forgot you just
90 seconds ago. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was surprised too. I mean, this number's like, that's pretty high. 56% think it's pretty good. The common thing for me reading all these was realizing that I was in the bleakest, smallest pie for most of these answers. I was like, it's like only 3% thinking. I was like, again, over.
Were you? Oh, so you were the 3% that felt genuinely terrible, though.
Not terrible, but 56, like you said, that seems so. Like part of it, I wonder. When I was reading this, I was thinking of you too, because it's like, I don't know about you, but my body's also totally falling apart, just like physically doing stuff. So I can't play basketball anymore and do a lot of that stuff. So like, that's kind of that, like, you know, you're feeling the physical,
that's what
wheels Ross, falling off.
Ross Tucker, who played in the NFL and has a very popular podcast right now, he told me that he hears that a lot from football players in their mid-30s and on into, like, especially when they get into their 40s. A lot of guys, I think like you and I, felt pretty good and we were really super active and everything. And then all of a sudden, it just hit warp speed. And like, I've got arthritis in my knees. And I was talking to the doctor about it. And he said, well, you know, usually, he was saying this kind of just casually. Well, you know, usually guys don't have arthritis like this in their knees until they're 65 or so. So yeah, you're on this schedule. I'm like, you son of a bitch. We're talking,
you're killing it.
Replacement and everything.
Yeah. You're an overachiever. It's weird too, because I like you, I'm sure I always expected it. It's not like I thought for one second, even going back to high school, I was like, well, I'm going to be paying for this when I'm in my 50s.
Yeah.
But I didn't, but it went from zero to light speed in like 2 years.
Right.
I was feeling really good at like 35. I was like, wow, I'm hanging in there. I'm doing pretty well. And then within 2 years, it just was like ankles shot, everything shot. So yeah. So I'm not 56.
The advice from the doctor they have in here is that you should reframe your midlife crisis, which it sounds like you had, as transformational opportunities to keep your momentum up and your attitude set on growth. The only issue I have with that is it says try refocusing on grown-up gains like deeper relationships, professional success, or being a dad. I'm like, no, those might be the very things that a guy is having a crisis about, right?
Right, exactly. It's like, you know what you got to do? Focus on the three things you definitely don't have and may not ever have. And just obsess relentlessly.
You know, one thing I've learned on this podcast is you make it way too easy for me to laugh at your pain. Sorry.
No, it's fine, man. Somebody has to, right?
You know what you should do, though, is because you don't
here we go.
Those things. No. I'm saying, like, just maybe throwing yourself into a charity or something, you know?
like you do. Like,
yeah, you know, I work with sick kids and stuff all
the time. That's
what I tell people whenever I whenever I don't show up to an appointment or something. Like, oh, yeah, I was working with sick kids. Yeah, so sorry. You can't be mad at me, can you? Yeah.
Just great life hack. Yeah. Why were you late to the meeting? I was helping sick children. Sorry.
All right. This is an interesting one. Are you as fit as you'd hoped you'd be right now? 60% said no, which doesn't surprise me. 40% say yes.
Aren't you kind of surprised it's not higher, though? I mean, I just feel like the default answer is almost always, you know, most people. I mean, because it doesn't mean you're not fit necessarily. It's just relative to what your own expectation is.
I think when the question is, are you as fit as you'd hoped right now? I think a lot of people abandoned hope long ago.
So, right.
So they figure, well, like, what are you talking about? Like, how, what I hoped I'd be when I was 20? Like, you know, that's far. So I think some people have just
right
either given up or they've reframed their expectations. They're kind of cool with having a dad bod. They're focused on other things. So I'm surprised it wasn't higher though, too, because I think in being honest with myself, when I was done playing football, I lost a bunch of weight really quickly, and I imagined that by the time I was 45 or so, or like really, I imagined by the time I was 35 that I was going to be like shredded with washboard abs and
yeah,
like maybe have like a sweet neck tattoo or something, and
for sure, and
just be physically a much different person than I am.
Just like working security in a Las Vegas nightclub.
Yeah.
Just jacked. You
just
know,
for the hell of it, right? Yeah,
just because you're so hot now. Like, yeah, God, did you hear what Seth is doing?
Because it would be like depriving the world if they couldn't see me before they went into a club.
Yeah, you got to be like at the 4A. It's the same thing for me. I'm like, I don't really beat myself up about it, especially after the last year. I feel like everybody gets a free pass.
Men making $100,000 or more skewed towards being happily fit. I'm thinking that's probably three factors. One is that there's a higher likelihood that somebody making over $100,000 is like a type A personality driven, probably just, you know, up at 4:30 a.m., all that annoying stuff. B, just more energy for exercise because they have a white collar job, and which also leads into C, that they've got more money to eat healthy, because eating healthy is freaking expensive compared to eating fast food or just picking up, you know, canned food from the grocery store.
Yeah, totally agree. It's like, who would have thought those things all line up together?
Do you believe your best days are ahead of you, behind you, or right now? 57% said ahead of you, 24% said behind you, and 19% said they were living the dream right then at 37 years old.
Oh, we want the honest answer.
Oh, that's right. I'm supposed to be... I'm supposed to be asking for consent first before. Yeah.
No, you're good.
Are you okay with this, Drew?
My immediate reaction is like behind me because I'm getting up and limping around and, you know, I mean, I'm aging but a lot of that is just like had ankle surgery and, you know.
But you're also, I would say for you, honestly and objectively, I'd say your best days are ahead of you. Because whether you choose to have a family or not, that's going to be something that's completely different than anything you've ever done. And you're also, I think, like in terms of material success and stuff like that, you have kind of a cool career arc because you played in the NFL for a while and you made good money. But it's not like you capped your career earnings when you were 24 years old.
Right.
The way some NFL players are never going to achieve what they did when they were 25, 26, 27 years old.
Right.
And like on a career perspective, including actual career success, because they reached the pinnacle in their careers. And if you're Pro Bowl, all pro in the NFL, it's very unlikely that whichever career you choose to go into after football, you're going to end up being one of the top 0.001% of people who do that thing or play that sport.
Right.
So you're that's you reframing it.
No, I like it. I like it. You know what's funny though, and I'm sure you've seen it, or maybe you went through it, where it's like you see the guys that when they transition out of it, I think that, and I got wrapped up in this a little bit, but it was fleeting. But the expectation that you're just going to become like a master of industry within, like, let's not be too aggressive. I will master this industry in 18 months.
Yeah. You're like, well, I've made good money, so I must know things about making money.
People seem to take me pretty seriously, and I've signed autographs, so I probably can run this hospital.
You know what?
Two
guys I've talked to about this that have both been really successful in business afterwards. One is Don Davey. He's a guy I played with in Jacksonville. He was an older guy when I was a younger guy. But he got his master's in engineering while he was playing football.
Oh,
he ended up starting a financial planning company while he was playing football. He's got a lot of money under management. I don't know how much, but and he also owns like every fire. He owns every firehouse subs in Wisconsin. I think he owns the entire state of Wisconsin, plus like he's got 20 or 30 stores in Florida
because he's got firehouse subs money.
He's got that quality meat money. But him and then Steve McKinney, who owns a bunch of McDonald's in Houston, both those guys, you know, we had conversations about how, like, you never really have an appreciation for how freaking hard it is to make just $100,000.
Yeah.
When you're in the NFL, you just don't, you really, your whole perspective on making money is completely unrealistic, which, you know, and you know that academically, but you don't really realize it. And like, and I'd say I grew up on farms, you know, I made my first job on a farm where I actually got paid. I was making minimum wage back in 1990 when minimum wage was like $3.35. I think they bumped it up to $4, but I still somehow after years in the NFL, I lost touch of just how hard it is to actually make money.
Well, I think the thing that's interesting too, is if you're a smart guy and you're relatively charismatic and you're well-spoken, you networked a little bit, when you retire, you can pretty quickly get back up to six figures.
Yeah.
I mean, you can jump in there. You'll get some kind of job if you're open to it. You can slide into a position where if you're showing up on time and you're using what you learned playing sports to just excel, but going from that like six figure mark to whatever the next scale is, like working up above like 150, 200 is a grind. That's where it takes that extra like, oh, this is going to take 10 years.
Yeah.
This is going to take 10 years. This is not going to be like a, like, hey, just get a new deal, you know, because like the, one of the best things someone told me was, you know, when I used to complain about people being frustrated at how much athletes were getting paid and everything else is, you know, I would just tell them like, it's, there's like the old adage about, you know, like when you hire someone to like a mechanic to fix their car, it's like, why are they charging me so much? He worked on it for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you're paying for all the work that went into it before they became skilled enough to actually perform the, you know, whatever the services you need. And it's like, you did all the work getting into the NFL. Like, that's like why you're skilled labor, you know, why it's valuable because
there's scarcity there. You've got,
exactly.
It's like anything else. Like there's just very few people that do what you do. And there's people that want to pay for it. Oh yeah. There's nothing like there's no meritocracy to like who makes money in, that's a little bit of the problem though, isn't it, right? That we've attached all this respect to billionaires when really, you know, like all throughout history, really in a lot of cultures, it hasn't been looked upon as like, wow, that's the best thing you can do in life is to amass huge, large quantities of cash.
My new it's that toxic capitalism. My new favorite pastime is just bashing famous billionaires. That's like pretty much so like I want to just destroy the mythology around, you know, like Bezos. Oh, I just started in his garage with a mild $300,000 loan. I'm just like, as we all have. Yeah, got it.
All right, let's see. Next question. Is your family life as happy as you'd like? 57% say yes, 43% say no. Men who are in a relationship or had kids were more likely to feel content, but not by much. So this is one of those things where you have to remember how surveys work. And it's not that like, it's not like every man with kids or in a relationship was a little bit happier. It's that a few more said that they're happier and a bunch more are just as miserable as a bunch of the guys that don't have kids or a family.
Right. Yeah. That actually, I couldn't tell when I saw the answers to this one. I couldn't tell if I was very surprised or not at all surprised, because it kind of makes sense when I think about all my buddies that are married, and it's like no one ever really wants to know this, but most of them tell me they're miserable. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, yeah, that tracks. That sort of tracks.
Yeah, but one of the biggest problems a lot of married guys have is what they do. I find, at least some married guys have a little bit too rosy of a picture of what they were as single guys. They all think that they could go out and pull like the hottest girl at the club.
Totally agree. Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I remember what it was like. I was definitely never just sitting by myself with a pizza feeling awful about myself. I was always I was out on the town every night and
if only I were single, man, I would just be out there. I would just be, it'd just be hookers and blow all day and night, man. I'm telling you. I'm just
Then some of them are just genuinely unhappy in their marriages. And
Do you find that, because like, do you have guys who like buddies that will, they'll do the thing where they're doing the shtick of how miserable they are kind of like in their marriage. And it's kind of like an, like, it's sort of a joke. It's like a, you know, it's like bleak humor. Almost, but then I feel like they buy into it after a while. And then it's like the joke becomes just their identity.
It really, well, you know what? It's interesting because there is a part of being happily married. And I think I was with my wife long enough beforehand, and I kind of went from not wanting to be married at all. Like, before I met my wife, I was like, nope, going to stay single forever. Not me. I'm never getting married. To where you kind of, you know, I was lucky enough to talk to some people. Like, I had friends that had come from really successful families. By that, I mean happy families, you know, like where the mom and dad were happy and the kids were genuinely happy. And, like, you just, I guess being comfortable and understanding that sometimes the whatever restrictions the institution of marriage places on you, ultimately, if you're 100% into it, it makes you happier. It's like anything in life generally, like, if you accept some restrictions, it makes you happier and better. Like, in your job, like in creative works, in personal relationships, all those things. Like, the restrictions are what keep you on a path that doesn't get all wobbly and frantic, and then bam, you're off the track. So I guess that's what helped me, I suppose. And I was lucky enough to find the right person too. So I don't know if sometimes I think about, cause I've got, you know, my friends that have gotten divorced and family members that have gotten divorced. It's one thing when you see it, when you're a kid, it just seems like, oh, that's something that adults do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird that you can make it until adulthood without realizing, like, holy shit, this is a big deal. Like, they're completely ripping their lives apart, and this is traumatic stuff. Like, this is like death. You know, so I could see how some guys that are married might be genuinely, like, unhappy in their marriage, but also they understand that they have it good compared to like if they ripped their lives apart.
Totally. That's where it's like that. That's probably my nightmare. I mean, that was always like the fear for me. I'm a family of divorce. We've had like 7 divorces in my family. So it's like,
yeah.
I was looking at it like, I don't know if I want to be in the situation where I'm held hostage to a marriage, because I'm worried that the alternative is just a complete disaster.
Yeah.
Like, that is, but yeah, but otherwise everything's great, man.
You know, the biggest, honestly, some of the older, so I'm going to tell you this, I'm going to talk you into getting married someday.
yeah, I know.
I've talked to people out of getting married when I know they're getting married for the wrong reasons, but it was kind of cool. Being with the Jaguars, who, you know, that was like one of the first Bible thumping teams. And I was decidedly not a Bible thumper, but I like to have conversations, and I like Tony Baselli and Mark Brunell, and those guys are super religious, and they were always really cool about, you know, talking to me about stuff. But when it came to just like the actual family side of things, even when they, you know, everything was always infused with religion, but then when they would talk about their marriages and their families, it was kind of a side of marriage that I didn't see growing up, because I was like you, I had a lot of people split up in my family. And the cool thing I saw was like, okay, these guys seem genuinely happy. It doesn't seem like they're just burying their misery underneath the religion or anything.
Right.
Like, they worked at their marriages. I remember talking to Bryce Pop about him and his wife going off to a marriage conference, you know, and just being really just remembering that it's like anything else. It's like a garden that you got to tend to the garden, and it can be beautiful and awesome. So that part was cool. So I guess maybe if I hadn't been in that environment and I just kept running around like my, well, I still was running around with my normal friends who were, you know, heathen, but, but I had that good influence. When it was time for me to leave my degenerates, then I had that example set for me. Let's see. What feeling best describes your day-to-day mood? 40% of people said upbeat. This is 37-year-old men. 40% said upbeat. 28% said stressed. 22% said indifferent. And 10% said lonesome. Do you feel like answering this one?
Yeah. I mean, I'll answer them all. We're already knee deep in the quicksand. It's not upbeat. It's not every day I'm, you know, feeling upbeat. But this is also like, think about the time capsule the survey is being taken in.
Yeah.
You know, it's like weird timing.
True. Yeah. They took this during COVID.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I wonder how many of these, they should do this again in a couple of years and see if people are happier.
Well, it's like initially you look at it and you go like, oh, 40% set up beat. But then you're like, yeah, but 60% were either stressed, indifferent, or lonesome. So it's pretty shitty.
10% being lonesome. I guess we talked about this last time. I think that 10% of people might be, I'd say 50% of the 10% who are lonesome might actually be okay being lonesome. So maybe it should be 5% lonesome and sad and 5%
yeah, like they lonesome misunderstood. And just
cool with it. Like, hey man, I like playing chess online. You know, like what? Yeah. I got pretty much everything I need, right? I could see that totally. If I were single, man, I don't know. I know I read so many studies about how important it is to socialize and be around people physically, you know, not just online. But there's so much cool stuff online and streaming and everything. Do you find yourself sometimes just knowing that you got to go out and see somebody, but also like, holy crap, I could watch this whole series on Netflix for.
Oh yeah. All the time. I have to turn like, it's like where you become disciplined about going to the gym. That's like my socializing with other people. Like I have to remind myself I need to go do it because it is super easy. I mean, I'm independent. I can be, you know, totally fine being isolated, and I can just sit and read a book and not even think about it. And then 2 days went by and I just was hanging out.
Yeah. You got to find that right balance.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity that one of the doctors here suggests is that it might be time to seek out new friends who also prioritize positivity.
Mm.
And also this doctor suggests keeping a gratitude journal.
Okay.
So if you're into journaling, you don't strike as a journaler.
Yeah, I'll get right on that gratitude journal, Doc. Are you kidding me?
I've got like 17 different journals strewn about the country.
Exactly.
Like with the first two pages scribbled in before I came up. Like somebody out there moved into an apartment and found my gratitude journal. And I was like, Breaking Bad is bitching.
I like that. I'm picturing the cover where a weight loss journal is scratched out and then underneath that says gratitude, and then it's scratched out, and then underneath it says like things to be thankful for, like scratched out. Yeah.
I like the Sopranos. Tony Soprano is an engaging personality. I would like to be like a legal, law-abiding Tony Soprano. Yeah, that was my gratitude from 2001. So seek out some more positive friends who I feel like you have friends that prioritize positivity.
I think so too.
Eric Winston is, I would say, are Eric Winston and David Anderson two of your better friends?
Yeah.
And those guys are both super positive.
Oh, I mean, they're just like beacons of just like relentless optimism, which is wild because we operate in like two different universes, but it's like why we get along in that way. You know,
yeah.
I'm like, man, you guys, like, it's just, if you ever met two people who are, you just feel very confident are going to continue to do well in what they're doing just by virtue of being certain they're going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they're just sure they're going to do it.
Eric was one of those guys. Eric came in, and I could tell just even when he was a rookie on a really bad football team, you could just tell he kind of had a certain method to the way he went about his day. And then we became involved in the NFLPA very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of was precocious in a lot of ways. And I know, I talked to him a few months after he was done as NFLPA president, and he's already, what's he doing? He's working with, he leveraged. Now that's a guy that like, he's the opposite of what we talked about earlier. He did just step into a role, basically leveraging his NFLPA presidency, where now he has a lot of knowledge about how brands work with,
well, he has the NBA from Wharton
and everything
too. Oh,
that's right too. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's not
executive
not
MBA from Wharton or an actual MBA.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I guess
I don't know the difference. I just know that I think
I don't know how good of a point it is either. I went to ASU. Come on.
What's your most important goal with exercise? 24% of 37-year-old men said feeling stronger. 34% said feeling more energetic, 29% said looking better, and 13% said managing stress. The point they made here was that the majority of men are more interested in how working out makes them feel, which I only half buy that because feeling more energetic makes sense. Managing stress, I consider that a feel, so that's about 50%.
Yeah,
feeling stronger, that's not okay. Feeling strong. No, that's still like you. That's it's almost a superficial thing, right? That's like, you want to take pride in being strong the same way you might take pride in having washboard abs. So I'd say this is like 50-50 down the middle. One is your actual emotions and energy and all that. The other is, all right, I either want to be yoked or like, I want to be sexy.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I rate this poll like a D plus C minus in its validity, because I feel like those, yeah, like you said, those three things are like synonyms. I mean, that's so close to being basically the same thing. It's basically like you do. I mean, there are a lot of guys that you see like at the gym that they really still are hung up on how much their bench press is, which is amazing to me, because I mean, I stopped giving a shit about my bench press like before I even stopped playing football. I that was ridiculous.
But that is something, you know, I think especially for guys that work out real hard, because there's so many guys, like most guys these days in their 20s are working out. So I feel like it's something that from the time you're in high school, you're obsessed with your bench when you're in high school and college. And then you just keep on with it. And if you've got a good bench, that probably becomes just a little bit of almost your identity, you know?
Yeah, you're the bench guy.
Seriously, I would love to be able to. I would love to be able to confidently answer, like, if somebody says, like, how much you bench, to be able to be like, I did 565 for 3 reps last week or something. I don't know. Do people do 565 for 3? I remember Gary Walker every now and then would like just throw 495 on and toss up a few reps and like. Just because he felt like it. Like that was, I remember the freakish strength of guys who weren't even necessarily working out all that hard. Yeah. They just, at any time, if they wanted to dial it up, they could.
Yes. But it is to look better purely. I'm in it for the vanity at this point. Well, and the energetic part. That's definitely also true.
Oh, I would say managing stress for me. Like when I started exercising specifically to manage stress, then all of a sudden I got super disciplined about it. And I think the other three kind of took care of itself. I don't know about feeling stronger, because I every now and then I swing a kettlebell or I do a hex bar deadlift, but I don't worry about that as much, but I definitely feel more energetic and I look better than when I'm like all, you know, puffy faced and 20 pounds heavier.
Or you just like pick on someone smaller than you.
Yeah. If I want to feel stronger.
Yeah.
I feel like a big man.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, one suggestion they give, which is kind of, it feels a little bit out of place, but they say to stay charged, try controlled breathing. Close your eyes and listen to your breath for 60 seconds. I would recommend a book called Breath. I think I sent this to you. I'm not sure. I meant to send you a physical copy and then I realized I fell through on that. But there's a whole lot on controlled breathing in there. And one of the most effective things they've discovered is that 5.5 second inhale, 5.5 second out exhale works really, really well for, and especially if you're doing it through your nose and you're humming as you exhale, then you increase your NO2 levels, your blood pressure decreases. And I've got an app, it's called Breathworks. That's really cool and simple, and it kind of has like several different guided breathing apps, breathing exercises. So I try to do that like 3 or 4 times a day. Whenever I start feeling the stress come on, I hit that app.
Nice, it's a lot of discipline.
No, it's an app. It's easy. It's
you're like, it's actually not. It's the opposite. I'm allowing the app to be my discipline.
All right, I'm gonna skip a couple of these. Let's see. Let's get to. Oh, what's your greatest health fear? Okay, here are the fears. Yeah. Dementia, cancer, ED, that's erectile dysfunction, fellas, diabetes, and heart attack. By far the greatest fear, and this surprised me a little bit, was 31% of men's greatest fear was heart attack. At the age of 37, I felt pretty, really, see, like when I was 37, I kind of felt like, that's forever away. Then I got into my 40s and I realized, like, oh, wait a second. That's like now. This is when guys really start getting heart attacks. Cancer was 28%, followed by dementia 17%, diabetes 14%, ED 10%. I bet back before Viagra and other pills came along, I bet would have been a lot higher. Yeah. Like, I would have been scared shitless if I were 37 and I was starting to, like, not have – as strong as they used to be if you didn't know that Viagra was there for you if you needed it. Okay, so your biggest fear was heart attack. Mine is dementia, just because
mine's not heart attack.
Oh, it's not. Oh, you just assumed that the others would be. Okay, what's yours?
No, mine's dementia for sure.
That's the thing.
Doesn't it have to be? That's not yours.
Well, there's no. It is. It is dementia.
Yeah.
There's no fixing dementia. I mean, not yet. They've made some progress, but for the most part, once you got it, that's it. Like you can stave off or slow it down a little bit, but you know, diabetes you can control. Heart attack you can at least if you die the first time, you're screwed. But mm-hmm. I feel like if you can at least manage it if you realize you've got plaque on your arteries or anything. But dementia is the big one, especially because, and then dementia is just so devastating to your family.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if
that kind of goes into like a group of just neurological stuff that just freaks me out. Like stroke, like having a stroke or like, you know, stuff like that is all very much the really kind of the only health thing that weighs on. Like, I'm not going to sit here and worry about cancer. That's weird to me. Like,
and yeah, you know, I was looking at the stats the other day. I think sometimes you almost fall into thinking about like, oh yeah, they're so good at beating cancer these days. And you know, the death rates, they're still pretty high. The death rates, you know, it's not, I think sometimes I lull myself into a sense of invincibility with cancer. And I feel like, well, whatever I get, I'll be able to knock it out with some chemo, lop it on. It's not quite that way, which is probably a good PSA for, you know, donate some money to the American Cancer Society. This is morbid as well. Which of these things are you most afraid of? These are the four options. Some unforeseen tragedy or disaster, getting old and slowing down, ruining a relationship or failing at work. Which one of those scares you the most?
It's probably, this is another one where it's like, I guess it's failing at work but that's just always my thing. It's always going to be like, that's just never going to go away. That's just how I'm programmed. It's just like, I'm like a fear of failure motivated person.
Yeah.
Like, that's just like, kind of how it is.
Then that's good. I mean, like in a lot of ways, well, I mean, but that might lead you to ruin a relationship.
Totally. Yeah. Hopefully.
Getting old and slowing down, I feel like that's, I don't know. I've accepted that that's an inevitability.
Right.
Right. I mean, you're gonna like, I'm older right now than when I started this podcast.
When did you accept it?
Probably I would say like maybe like around my late 30s. If I started having kind of existential contemplations, I read a few different books about, I don't want to say Buddhism, but just kind of more Eastern philosophy related stuff and kind of started to try to just look at myself. I tried to this is what I tried to do, Drew. I tried to go on an acid trip without actually doing acid because I'm still an acid virgin. But you hear everything, what people say about LSD or hallucinogenics is that you, if you do it right, you kind of see yourself as part of the world instead of you being separate from the world and try to impose yourself on the world. You kill your ego. Like you kill your concept of self as much as possible. So I didn't want to have to use drugs to do it. I wanted to come by it naturally. So I've just kind of contemplate on that as much as I can. I try to honestly think about like the fact that my physical body is not the same and never has been. Like it's constantly changing. That we really are just. Boy, I'm really getting just.
No, it's true though. It's
we're
true.
Just we're waves of energy, you know, and like we kind of like the particles come to us and then they leave us. But we're just kind of this wave of energy, and then one day when I die, it's just gonna dissipate off into the world, and that's kind of how it is. And I don't know. None of that seems like it should make you feel better. And I remember when I first started contemplating it, it really, really freaked me out. But the more I think about it, and that was maybe one of the best advice, some of the best advice somebody ever gave me, and I've seen it a bunch of different places since, so I can't remember who told me the first, was that if you just contemplate life and death a little bit every day, and after a while, you kind of get, you're at peace with it, and you understand kind of just the cycles and the rhythm of nature, and that you're just part of that.
That's good. Good advice. I agree. This largest portion, the 36% of some unforeseen tragedy disaster.
Yeah.
That seems like whether you're 37 or not, the people that are responding to that one being their number one, it'll always be their number one, regardless of the phase. And like, that's just weird paranoia to me.
Oh, that would be. I might say that one, though, because I don't really feel like I'm afraid of anything. I mean, I've got my normal fears, like, oh, gosh, yeah. I hope I don't get hit by that bus. I'm glad you said that, because I don't necessarily feel like any of these is a pressing fear in my life. So failing at work might be my biggest fear. The unforeseen tragedy does freak me out a little bit, just because I've been relatively lucky. Like, most of the people that have died in my life, well, the people that have died, okay, it's been a while, I guess. When I was younger, I had tragedy, and I guess I've maybe sealed myself off from that, and it's been a long time, so I kind of feel like I'm due. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how I'll handle it now that I'm actually responsible for people, if like a close acquaintance or, you know, at some point, you know, everybody in my family that's died have been grandparents or older people or distant cousins.
Wow. I really internalized this because I was assuming that the tragedy was happening to you specifically.
Yeah.
So I was definitely looking at it. I wasn't even considering that it really can just kind of mean blanket, you know, someone like a family member.
The worst tragedy that happened to me, because I said distant cousins, but the actual tragedy of a close relative would be my first cousin committed suicide. And that freaks me out. I don't want to get too, let's keep this lighthearted. It was hard enough for me, but then obviously my aunt and uncle and my his brother, my other cousin, I've seen what that was like for them.
Yeah.
That freaks me out.
Yeah. You're like worried about the change.
Yeah. So, what is your preferred way to care for mental health? This is interesting. I didn't even know that one of these was an option. Exercise, sex, which I never, I didn't even think about that. I was like, okay, time to care for my mental health. Alcohol, therapy, medication, or I don't have one. Exercise was the most popular. Now, I don't know if these respondents were all men's health readers or if they were just random 37-year-olds.
Right.
That makes sense. Sex is I guess I never looked at sex as a therapeutic way, other than that, like, okay, I'm feeling pretty tense, like I need some sex. But so I guess I'll feel better mentally if I get it. But I never thought of that as like a...
my interpretation of that is like you're sort of like you're like an aging lion thing and you want to be validated that you still got it.
Oh, okay.
You know, like you're middle aged and then it's like, you know, maybe you get a little action. You're feeling like less of a fucking raggedy old man while I just drop F-bombs.
You don't feel so useless. No, that's
all right. Yeah, exactly.
That's all right. As we get older, too, we'll start swearing more, too. It's like, feel like we're cooler, edgier. I'm like, I'm basically like George Carlin, but, you know, the young one with the ponytail in it.
Yeah, the hot one. Yeah.
Was George Carlin considered hot?
Yeah, no. But,
I don't know. I bet some women did. Older women like comedians in general. They're standing up on stage. They're the alpha, you know.
You're right.
And then Carlin kind of had a bad boy appeal, especially to maybe like say young college hippies. Like back in the 70s, especially he'd have been that counterculture. It would have given off that counterculture vibe. Let's see. What do you want more of in life? This will be the last one we do. Time or money? 57% said time, 43% said money.
I mean, only a moron says money.
Yeah.
I find that to be, you're an idiot. If you say money, you're an idiot. Because what if
more money gets you more time?
Like you need like an experimental treatment, like to come back from a... No, I mean.
Oh, no. Wait. Now, are you thinking about time like on a day-to-day basis or time as far as like years left on your life?
Oh, I'm thinking about it just kind of like big picture. Yeah, years left on your in life, you know, because I assume this is like a middle-aged thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Yeah, I guess you're right because it says it's free time.
Yeah, I just feel like
the only thing you can't, you know, create in any capacity is time.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. It's the resource you can't generate.
Yeah, I remember I was talking to a really successful restaurant guy once, and that's what he That's what he said, that once he reached a certain level, he realized he really had to start thinking more in terms of like how he divides his day and everything, because he was going to make money regardless. So the best way to do it and to actually enjoy the money he was making was to be very, very strict about his time and to be sure that. And he said when he started doing that, he started making a lot more money too, because he became so efficient. You know,
yeah,
you cut out all the fat and you cut out all the useless activity, and then you actually got time for your kids and you're being way more efficient and focused at work. So right. I would agree with time. I'm glad it's interesting that you went there immediately to actually like time in terms of maybe years of life. Cause yeah, for sure. I'd say that like I would, my calculations are that I'm going to live to be 100. It's going to really screw me up.
Right.
I'm going to be, and I can totally see it just like you and I thought that, oh yeah, someday, it'll be time to pay the bill for my previous life and my knees will start giving out. But when it actually started happening, I was kind of like, well, no, not now. This is like, I didn't expect to have to pay this bill. So if I'm out in the garden at the age of 77 and I feel the big one coming on, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be really pissed. I'm like, well, no. I got 23 left. What are you doing?
Yeah. I've made a mistake on these expectations. Totally. I'm with you. That's why I'm trying to, I joke with my brother all the time where I'm like, man, I got every year past 56, I'm killing it. Yeah. I am killing it. You know,
after 56, set
the bar low and then just, every year's a win.
Every year after 56, you should allow yourself to do something that you didn't do before. You know, like by the time you get to 65, you'll be up to heroin and,
and then just keep pushing, like keep upping the ante to lower the years.
Yeah. Just come to some kind of self-destructive bent to the point where all of a sudden you're just
until I'm convinced that I'm invincible.
Your last bucket list item after you complete 999 previous buckets will be to die with dignity, and then you'll scratch it off with a number 2 pencil.
Oh, wow. That was a beautiful finish.
It was. I feel poetic today. Wow. All right, buddy. We'll get back together next week and we'll actually talk about football or something. So you guys can save your angry comments, or actually DM me your angry comments about this wasn't about football and it was just about life and death and ED at Seth C. Payne on Twitter or Instagram. You can just go ahead and DM me. And Drew, do you want people getting in touch with you?
Yeah, do it. And then probably pretty small chance I'll actually read it, but do it. Do it. It validates my ego, barely.
He's Drew Hodgson on Twitter. He's hardly ever there, but send him a DM. Thanks, everybody.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.